Support for this episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere is made possible by the Wessex Press, the premier publisher of books about Sherlock Holmes and his world. Find them online at wessexpress.com. And the Baker Street Journal, the leading publication of Sherlockian scholarship since 1946. Subscriptions available at bakerstreetjournal.com.
I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, episode 107. A Scintillation of Scions.
I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became astronomer.
In a world where it's always 1895, comes I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, a podcast for devotees of Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the world's first unofficial consulting detective.
I've heard of you before. You're Holmes the meddler, Holmes the busybody, Holmes the Scotland Yard jack in office.
The game's afoot as we discuss goings-on in the world of Sherlock Holmes enthusiasts, the Baker Street irregulars, and popular culture related to the great detective.
As we go to press, sensational developments have been reported.
So join your hosts, Scott Monty and Burke Walder, as they talk about what's new in the world of Sherlock Holmes.
You couldn't have come at a better time!
Oh, it's that time of year. Oh. Break out the jack-o'-lanterns. Get the rakes ready for your leaves. It is autumn. It is Halloween. It is time to start putting a scarf on. For God's sake, it's getting cold outside. Bundle up. You'll catch your death of cold.
Well, that's because you're in Michigan.
But wherever you are, this is still I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast for Sherlock Holmes devotees where it's always 1895. I'm Scott Monty.
And I'm Burt Wolder.
And we're here to talk to you about sensible attire in the throes of autumn.
Yes.
Whether you live in Michigan or New Jersey or even California.
That's right.
Please, if you're going out, use your Sherlock Holmes brand muffler. On your car, on your neck, wherever you need muffler.
Yes. My goodness, I installed my Sherlock Holmes brand muffler on my 1972 Audi, and now when I start the car and go to work in the morning, no one even knows I've left the neighborhood.
So how are you?
I'm all right. I'm well. How are you?
I am doing fine. It's been a hectic few weeks of traveling, and I know we've managed to squeeze this recording in just by the skin of our teeth. And I'm so glad we did, because we've got a wonderful guest with us today.
Yes.
Talking about a variety of topics, but one of which, as the title indicated, is an event called A Scintillation of Scions.
Yes, exactly right.
But I guess before we get into all that, we need to.
So soon?
Yeah. You know, let's get it out of the way.
Oh, good idea.
The ancient Anglo-Saxon kingdom of Wessex looks forward to independence. But our mapmakers have been unpleasantly surprised to find new settlements called Exeter, Plymouth, and Southampton in our historic territory. Apparently, a lot has changed since the 6th century. You can't afford to ignore current events. That's why you need your copy of One Fixed Point in a Changing Age, a new generation on Sherlock Holmes from the Wessex Press. These essays by a new generation of enthusiasts, many of whom are young or female or both, embrace modern-day revelations of a Sherlock Holmes in a world Conan Doyle could not have imagined. And there's an introduction by Laurie R. King. Friends, the vines that round the thatch eaves are loaded and blessed with fruit. In this season of mists and mellow firesides, reach for the pleasure only a volume from the Wessex Press can provide. Choose yours today.
You know, they say crime doesn't pay, but our sponsors do, so that's why we need to do stuff like that. Well, we are delighted to welcome Jacqueline Morris to the show. Jacqueline is a member of the Baker Street Irregulars, invested just a couple of years ago as the lion's mane. Cyanea capillata of notorious memory in the lion's mane. Now, Jacqueline has been a Sherlockian for quite a while and has made quite a name for herself in really the last 10 years or so. We're going to talk with her momentarily about her involvement in a number of projects, but she has been an absolute delight to get to know both online and in person.
So, Scott, I believe we're ready to welcome Jacqueline Morris.
Why we are, in fact, Bert. So welcome, Jacqueline Morris.
Hello, Jacqueline.
Thank you. Hello.
Well, I can't remember how far back our Sherlockian association goes, but, you know, when you and I first, I think it was corresponding first online, et cetera, we eventually met in person, but to me, and you find all kinds of people like this in our little hobby. To me, it was like we had been long lost friends. We had been at this for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you get that sense or if I'm just making things up.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. That's kind of been my experience meeting a lot of Sherlockians online before I've met them actually in person, to where we have a bit of a friendship in advance of actually having met. So I believe that's the case in this, you know, in this case too.
Hmm.
Well, that makes it handy for when you're traveling, you've got other places to stay, right?
Or at least somebody to share a coffee with or, you know, or a drink.
There you go.
So how did you get into all of this, Jacqueline? When, as we like to ask people, when did you first meet Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I think like everybody else, I read the stories way back when, you know, when I was about 11 or 12. I used to go to the library in my neighborhood and just check out as many books as they would allow me to check out. And I remember having read Sherlock Holmes at that time. I also was very much into Edgar Allan Poe and some science fiction as well. But so about 11 or 12 was my first introduction. But I had no understanding or comprehension at all that there were such things as the BSI or science societies or anybody who liked these things as I did until I was well into my 30s.
Yeah, and how did you first tumble to the fact there were other crazy, enthusiasts around?
Well, I got involved with reading a lot of mystery fiction, and I was a volunteer on AOL for a number of years in the Mystery Fiction Forum. And through that, I got to know quite a number of mystery authors like Laura Lippman and S.J. Rosen and Joseph Wallace, Dennis Lehane, quite a number of now rather well-known mystery authors, because I moderated a message board there.
Yeah.
And so I went to a fan-run mystery con in the Bethesda, Maryland area a number of years ago and met some of them in person. And then at the end of the event, there was a tea, and I went to go sit with someone, and I couldn't find anybody that I knew, and I asked some ladies if I could sit with them, and they said, sure. And they said, so what's your favorite detective, or what's your favorite mystery? And I said, Sherlock Holmes, and their faces lit up. And I was like, I have found my tribe. And one of them was Debbie Clark, who is a member of Watson's Tin Box, and she invited me to attend a meeting. And it was all downhill from there.
Oh.
I was bit by the bug.
Hmm. I don't think we've ever talked to anyone whose introduction to Sherlock Holmes was through a close connection with mystery fiction and other writers.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And an AOL message board to that extent.
Yes.
Boy.
Yeah, I was a moderator for the mystery fiction in the mystery fiction forum.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
Yes, they were.
We were screaming at each other on Facebook. We could do it in private in message forums.
Oh gosh! Well, I used to. I had to be the. I had to crack the whip in the forum because people. It was moderated. I mean,
Yeah.
People could not get on there and say nasty things to each other. I had the power. I could remove their posts. I could write to them privately and say, back off. Hmm. So, yeah, those were the days. There was civility was enforced.
Well, you know, and I think back to my first days on the web involved with other Sherlockians. It started with alt.fan.homes way back on the bulletin boards. And Sherlocktron was around back then. And, of course, Chris Redmond established his site, Sherlockian.net, around that era. And then the Hounds of the Internet sprung up. And,
I was a member of them for a while.
Well, of course, Maryland native and tin box extraordinaire, Steve Clarkson was.
May he rest in peace.
Right?
Yeah.
Did you know Steve?
Oh, yes. Yes. When I joined tin box, Steve Clarkson and Paul Churchill were there and, I was so nervous about going to the first meeting. Of course, like everybody who's coming into the game, I was very nervous and thought, oh, I don't know anything, and these people know everything, and I'm going to feel so, you know, so uncomfortable. And Steve and Paul and Andy Solberg just welcomed me into the fold and made me feel very comfortable. And sometimes Paul Churchill would give me answers to quiz questions. And, you know, Steve kind of took me under his wing. So yes, I knew them, and thankfully I was introduced to science societies through them.
But you could have done a lot worse than those three guys.
Boy, could I ever? Yeah, they were wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to us a little bit about Watson's Tin Box. You know, it's still extant. It's still meeting on a regular basis and a very regular basis too. Why don't you tell us about, you know, Watson's Tin Box for those people who haven't heard of it before or perhaps don't know what it's all about?
Sure. We meet in the Ellicott City area in Maryland. It's near Columbia. If you know anything about Maryland, those cities kind of overlap each other. We meet once a month, which I know is somewhat unusual for science societies. But we all need our fix. At the end of 30 days, we're ready to have another meeting. Paul Churchill always used to say that, I need a tin box meeting. Of the members we have now, I believe there are only about five of us who were there back when I first joined. But we have meetings that can get up to 35, 40 people at a time. And we've got a huge surge of members when, you know, in 2009, when the Robert Downey Jr. film came out, and then, of course, with BBC Sherlock, we got quite a number of new members who have just added so much vitality to the group. We really, really enjoy our older members and our newer members.
That's wonderful. So in addition to the monthly regular meetings, which I would imagine are fairly informal affairs?
Well, there is a structure of sorts, but yeah, it's informal. I mean, it's a very friendly group. Anybody who's come in for the first time, just as I experienced years ago with a different set of people, everybody's welcomed and are kind of our motto is, if you've attended one meeting, it could have been an honest mistake. If you attend a second meeting, we know now that you're serious about this and you're considered a member.
Fool me once. Shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
So when we go around the room and introduce ourselves, if someone is there for the second time, we applaud them that they are a new member.
And if you attend a third meeting, we change the location and don't tell you.
Exactly. No.
So, and are these held at a library? Are they held at a restaurant? What's the setup?
Yeah, we have had a long and sad history of closing restaurants.
Oh no!
Over the years, yeah, I was Gasogene of Tin Box twice. Now we change leadership every year, and generally, no one gets to do it twice. I just happened to be someone who was available when nobody else could take it on for the second time. And during both of my terms as Gasogene, we lost a restaurant and had to go scrambling to find one. Because our requirements are few, but we, so is our budget. It's pretty small. So we can't pay for a meeting room. So we needed to find some place that had a separate meeting room and that was handicap accessible and that we could have a limited menu to keep the costs down for everybody. But we've been at a Houlihan's restaurant for a number of years, and that's worked out just fabulously.
Great. So do you feel any guilt over making these restaurants close after stiffing them on the room fee? Or
now they had it coming.
So what's a meeting like of Watson's Tin Box? Do you do toasts? Do you do papers? What do you do?
Well, yeah, pretty much the structure is the Gasogene, you know, welcomes everybody. And then we go around the room and say our name. Sometimes the Gasogene will say, you know, give us your name and like your favorite character in the canon or something. Or what's the last book you read? Things like that. So that we not only know somebody's name, but we know a little bit about them. So we go around the room and do that. And then there are announcements. And then we have, we have toasts. We used to have them, like in advance, I guess the Gasogene would say, you know, this meeting, the toasts are going to be, about animals in the canon. But now, we have changed that a little bit. And now it's kind of a pop quiz, you know, quick toast something, you know, toast a building in the canon or something. So then we're kind of put on the spot, but it ends up being fun that way. Yeah. And we always have a toast to the woman, and someone is asked in advance to do that. But that's the only regular toast that we have. And then we generally have, well, you know, in between times we're being served our meal and everything, but we will have some sort of presentation by someone in the group, or sometimes it's a guest speaker. And then we have a quiz, which is done by Karen Wilson. And then we can't leave each other. Even when the meeting's over, we all hang around forever and ever and just chat. So it's a very convivial group.
That's neat. Now, Watson's Tin Box was behind this Saturday with Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Probably can you elaborate on that a little bit? Maybe explain to our listeners what it is and how it got started, if you're aware of that.
I'm not real clear on when it started. I know it's. I believe this is the 37th year.
Wow. It
started with the Six Napoleons of Baltimore and a group called the Carlton Club, which I think is no longer in existence, and the Tin Box. And so it is I understand back in the day it was a little more elaborate than it is now. There were films and things, but now it's pretty much half a day of scholarship based on a theme chosen by the organizer. And it's great. It's just a lot of really well thought out papers on various aspects of whatever the theme is. This year, the theme is, but is it literature? And so there's a number of speakers who will be addressing that. Now, the person who organizes the Pratt event, the Saturday with Sherlock Holmes, is Beth Austin, who's a member of ASH and a member of the Tin Box. And she's been doing it for a couple of years. Bill Hyder did it for a number of years before that. I can't recall all the previous people in charge, but it's a nice informal kind of gathering of local people. We have it at a library and it's free, so everybody can come And we get a lot of first-timers there who then, you know, we can also tell them about the tin box if they're interested in attending a meeting.
Yeah.
So it's a great Saturday afternoon.
Is it once a year?
Yes, it is.
Once a year, okay. So I would have to imagine that as a regular at Watson's Tin Box, a regular at Saturdays with Sherlock Holmes, it kind of imbued you with this itch to create something that's a little larger than a monthly meeting. It's a little larger than just the locals. And mm-hmm. so we want to talk to you about Scintillation of Scions. Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the show, of the event. I was lucky enough to be in attendance and having been asked to speak. I think it was SOS 8, if I'm not mistaken.
It was 7 or 8.
Seven or eight. Yeah.
Somewhere have a list, but not in front of me.
Yeah. And I was really, really impressed. So like all superheroes have an origin story. People love origin stories. So tell us yours for SOS.
Okay. I had, back in 2007, I had been, attending some smaller gatherings. Well, the Saturday with Sherlock Holmes locally. And then also in Dayton, Ohio, there was a Sherlock Holmes symposium that I attended for several years. And there was nothing out here at the time, nothing out here on the East Coast that really brought people together like that. I mean, there was BSI Weekend, but that to me was like, you know, Valhalla. I would never get there. So I was trying to find something for, you know, the average schmo. And I thought, well, you know, I understood that about Sherlockian scholarship. And I knew there were a lot of people who had spoken at Tin Box and other places I'd been that had a lot to offer, but not a very big audience. And there's a number of science societies out this way just within driving range of our house, there's like five or six. And so we're blessed with that. Yeah. But everybody kind of cross pollinates, you know, people don't just go to one sign. Generally, they'll go to the different ones and visit. I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have like a Sherlockian family reunion, get people together and have a good time and have it be kind of like an extended version of the Saturday with Sherlock Holmes. With some things besides just scholarship. And I thought, well, this is kind of a crazy idea. But I talked to Andy Solberg is kind of my sounding board. He's always the voice of reason for me. So I talked to him about the idea, and he's honest. I know he would have told me if he thought it was, you know, not a good idea. But he said, this sounds great. Go for it. Do it. Whatever you need, I'll support you. And I also talked to Steve Doyle, who is another sounding board for me, and he said the same. So we organized it. Our first one was in 2008, and it was very small. I charged next to nothing for people to come because I thought, I don't even know if people are going to want to be here. So I think it was like $10 a person or something crazy like that.
Goodness.
And I asked Peter Blau to be the keynote speaker, and God bless him, he agreed. And so he kind of put a little stamp of approval on it for me. Also, Bill Hyder had he has some wonderful skits that he's done over the years, and he offered to do one for the first scintillation. And we had several people from the local science societies come and speak, and we had about 42 people, I think, at that first one. We did everything ourselves. we bought food from the deli, and we had, because the afternoon tea began as a tradition of scintillation then, as because people always, you know, hang out and get to know each other over food. Mm-hmm. So we just went to the local deli, had little sandwiches made. Everybody brought teacups and teapots, and we were off and running.
That's
wonderful. It's grown significantly since then.
Yeah. So typically, the past few years, how many people do you get at one of the scintillation gatherings?
Well, we could have more than 100, but I pretty much try to keep it at around 100. I haven't had to, you know, like kick people out or anything. So, you know, we about 100 to 105 or so is what we've had. And that's how I like it, because I think if it gets too big, it would take away the spirit of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
If you have too big of a group, then you have people separating off into their own little groups, and then you don't get that family reunion atmosphere, which I was going for then, and it's still part of what scintillation is all about.
I think that's a great way to describe it. I don't think I've heard of any other Sherlockian gathering described as a family reunion.
But like, it felt to me like that's who we are, you know, that we are all part of this crazy family of people who like Sherlock Holmes, and we have all different interests, and we come from all different parts of the world and, you know, different professions and backgrounds. And yet we all have this thing in common. And this really, I think, really was good for us when the newer fandom came on the scene.
Mm.
We made sure that we let them know they were all more than welcome to be a part of our event.
Right.
Yeah.
And you've also been involved in the essay contest, haven't you? You've been very actively engaged in bringing young people to. Why don't you talk a little bit about how the essay contest works? If that's for something like isn't that something like seventh graders, the focus of that?
Yes. Seventh graders in Howard County, Maryland. I forget the actual figure. Andy Solberg could give you that, but I know we've reached thousands of kids through the essay contest. But several years ago, I had a job at the Howard County Library System, and I was working in an office with the people who manage all the children's programming. And Andy Solberg and I had been talking about doing some kind of essay contest. And Bruce Eberle, who's one of our tin boxers, former Gasogene, was also involved in that conversation. And I said, well, you know, I'm working at the library. Let me see if I can get anybody there interested in this, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll sponsor it or something. So we had a meeting with the people at the library, and they were very enthusiastic. They had connections in the public school system, and said that they would share those with us so that we could see about getting it into the schools. So for the past, I think, 12 years, I believe, we have, Andy has presented at the beginning of the school year to the seventh grade teachers what the essay contest is about. And we always use the same story. It's the Speckled Band. And it's, the kids are introduced to it at the beginning of the school year, and they have until the end of the school year. We accept essays from them. The teachers sometimes are able to incorporate it into their curriculum, which we encourage, but, you know, it doesn't always work that way. But we have seventh grade students from all around the county, kids in private school, public school, homeschool, and it's a great program. When we have read through the essays and chosen the winners. There's always a, you know, like the Clarkson Prize is the top prize. And then we have, I think we have two more prizes after that. But we have a little award ceremony for the kids and their parents. Often the teachers attend the awards ceremony as well. And it's just great fun. It's just great fun to be involved with it and to, some of the essays are remarkable.
Hmm. Do you remember any of them off the top of your head, the general topics?
not at this moment.
Have you ever had a kid that's been upset by the story?
I've not heard of anyone who was. Most of them are very enthusiastic.
No, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Because I remember that was... That was the first Sherlock Holmes story I gave to my oldest daughter to read, and it scared the bejesus out of her.
Oh. Yeah, it is kind of scary, but I don't know. By seventh grade, maybe these kids are a little more jaded.
I think so, yeah.
I was going to say the winning essay is always published in our annual tin box publication, Irene's Cabinet, which is also done by Beth Austin, who's doing the Saturday with Sherlock Holmes. She's been doing that for about 12 years. So the winning essay is always published in there, and with the parents' permission. And we always, you know, tell the kids, hey, you know, you're only 12 years old, but you're already a published author.
There you go.
They get a thrill out of that.
Now, have you seen any of these kids that have won the Clarkson Prize end up becoming members of Watson's Tin Box?
Not so much. No, I don't know why that is, because we always, you know, we always tell them about the meetings. Of course, at 12, they wouldn't really want to come to a meeting. And I don't know, maybe by the time they get to be 17 or 18, they've completely forgotten who we are. so that's okay. But we did have a young woman who came when she was about 15. She came, I think she came to the essay contest. And she came with her dad, and her name was Cliffy Hickar, and she would come with one of her parents to Tin Box meetings for a number of years, and her parents were members as well. So then she got old enough where she could come to a meeting by herself because she could drive. But it was great to have that little connection.
It's wonderful. So thinking back to Scintillation, And mm-hmm. the many presentations you've had over the previous 10 years, and I know you schedule these all well in advance, and you do a wonderful right. job of having a variety every year. What are some of the standouts that that you recall, either that you thought were great, or perhaps that the attendees came up to you afterwards and gave you some feedback? And I said, oh my goodness, I can't believe that. That someone presented on this. This is amazing.
Well, not to toot my own horn, but we get that practically every year. Is someone will come up and say, "Oh my gosh, what a great selection of speakers!" But we've had, I can tell you one speaker who just really stands out above all of the other excellent speakers is Vincent Wright. From Indianapolis. He first spoke at Scintillation way back when. I think it was maybe Scintillation 4 or 5. And he talked about The Hound of the Baskervilles, the book cover. And he just played us along, led us by the nose. And at the very end, he had a kind of an O. Henry kind of moment for us. Just a little surprise. And it was wonderful. Everybody loved it. And they've always wanted him back, and I'm glad to say that he's going to be speaking at Scintillation 10 in this coming June.
Oh, that's fantastic!
He's very good. We've also had some crazy things that aren't really scholarship-y at all. We've had a sword fight demo,
what?
Which was great fun. That was last year. I mean, not last year, but it was Scintillation 8 because that was. The year that Scintillation fell on Basil Rathbone's birthday.
Ah.
So we had a stand-up Basil that people could get their picture with.
Flat Basil.
We had a birthday cake for Basil Rathbone, and we had sword fighting for some of his other roles that were not Sherlock Holmes.
That's fantastic. Would you have to, like, clear the room for a sword fight? I mean, pull up on tape.
It was two people. Carrie Carlson and James Dean. Yes, his name is James Dean. They belong to one of those Society for Creative Anachronism type things, and they know sword fighting really well. And so we cleared the middle of the room, and they did some demos on different ways to use the sword and different rules in sword fighting. It was great. Everybody loved it.
How fun. So that was 8. So I must have been at 7. I was at the one right before.
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah. And then this last year we had a wedding.
An actual
wedding? An actual wedding. Yes.
That's a first.
Yeah. Yeah. we had a couple who met at the previous scintillation, and, you know, birds sang, sparks flew, whatever. And within a few months of having met, they were engaged, and they asked if they could have their wedding at scintillation. And we had it on the Friday night. We always have a Friday night reception, and they had the wedding at the Friday night reception.
Well, be careful, because once they have a kid, I would not recommend having a bris at the next.
No, I don't think that's in the cards. But yeah, so that was really cool. Everybody was dressed up in Victorian garb, and the officiant was Monica Schmidt, member of ASH. She was the officiant for the happy couple.
So, what are you looking forward to about Scintillation of Science 10? And are you going with the Arabic numerals or Roman numerals?
Roman.
All right. So this is Scintillation of Scion X.
SOSX. Yeah. Don't say it too fast. I almost always have my next year's lineup of speakers before the current scintillation is over.
Wow.
So I pretty much have my lineup set, and we have some terrific speakers. We've got Michael Sims. He spoke at last scintillation, but he asked if he could speak again at this coming one. He's got a book coming out, Arthur and Sherlock, Conan Doyle and the Creation of Holmes. And he'll have his book available there. But I've read some bits and pieces of this book, and it's remarkable. Michael Sims is a terrific writer. He will be one of the speakers. We also have Tracy Revels, who has written a number of pastiches, Shadow Blood, Shadow Fall, Shadow Wraith. She will be one of the speakers. Vincent Wright, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. he also has a book to hawk, which is an MX publishing book, the new Sherlock Holmes stories. Vincent has at least one story. I think they're on volume 3 now. We also have Beth Austin, who I've mentioned several times already tonight. We have Leah Gwynn, who co-wrote with Jamie Mahoney the A Curious Collection of Dates, Sherlock Holmes' book of what happened on this date in Sherlock, in Victorian, Sherlockian, Doylean world. And we have Christopher Zordon, who is a chemist. And just if you just think about Sherlock Holmes and chemistry and what Christopher might come up with, really looking forward to his paper.
Excellent.
But no sword fights this time.
Well, no planned ones.
Right. Well, you never know.
And what was the path that got you from Watson's Tin Box and Scintillation to Undershaw?
Back in 2010, my friend Michael Quigley, who is he's the Gasogene of the Diogenes Club of D.C., had mentioned something on Facebook about Undershaw, and I had never heard of it before. I wasn't even aware that it existed. And I got in touch with him, and he put me in touch with a woman named Lynn Gale, who was one of the co-founders of the Undershaw Preservation Trust. And she kind of brought me up to speed on what the Preservation Trust was trying to do in order to save Conan Doyle's home in Hindhead, Surrey. And so I came on board and helped Lynn. We kind of, even though we were across the pond, we kind of worked side by side for a number of years trying to bring awareness of what was going on with Undershaw, which just briefly, it had been sold to a company that is out of the United States. It sold to a company and just allowed to kind of fall into disrepair. And the Undershaw Preservation Trust was trying to bring the local council aware of what was going on and kind of put their feet to the fire to try and get something done to keep the home from deteriorating further. There's a gentleman named John Gibson who actually is the founder of Undershaw Preservation Trust, and I understand he's an attorney. And so he was the sparking plug of the Undershaw Preservation Trust, although he pretty much was behind the scenes a good part of the time. Lynn and I recruited people around the world to be ambassadors, to do little like flash mob things and such to bring awareness to what was going on with Undershaw.
Well, it's very remarkable. It's one of the success of the preservation effort. We just had, I was at the meeting last week of the Priory Scholars in New York, and one of our members had been to Undershaw and had a fascinating book that included some pictures of the restored house, which mm-hmm. I gather is now a school for special needs children?
Yes, yes. They have added quite a bit on to, you know, meet the needs of the children. But they, it's my understanding, they preserved as much of the original home as they could.
Yeah, and Conan Doyle's stained glass that he designed and commissioned, I think, are all there and have been restored. So that's pretty interesting.
It's my understanding that they have worked on restoring them. I'm not sure if that restoration is done with yet.
Hmm. Well, we've got a couple of posts up on IHearOfSherlock.com from folks that were there for the opening gala, and it's the you mentioned MX Publishing before. They've been very active in some of their publications. They've got, I think they're going on a fifth volume now of new Sherlock Holmes stories.
Oh, okay. I was kind of behind the times. I think I said three volumes. So they're on the fifth one now?
Coming up with a Christmas edition.
Oh, yeah.
Fifth edition. And all of the proceeds from that are going to the trust as well. So, yeah, it's wonderful to see so many interested Sherlockians from all around the world doing their own parts to help to contribute to keeping this memory alive. Yeah. Would it have been great if it were recognized as a grade two listing and preserved as a museum or something? Oh, sure. But, you know, at least in this respect, it's still being used. It was fairly preserved. And, you know, we have the legacy of Conan Doyle living on through children.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, the money that is raised by MX is not going to the trust. The trust has dissolved. But it's my understanding that money is going toward further restoration projects in the Undershaw property itself.
Okay. Good. Well, thanks for that clarification there.
Sure.
That's great. So in addition to compilations like the MX books of Sherlock Holmes stories, new Sherlock Holmes stories, we had occasion to speak with Chris Redmond on episode 99. And of course, he's always full of projects. And the one that he had mentioned that was still in the works when he talked to us is now out. It is About 60. Why Every Sherlock Holmes Story is the Best. And Jacqueline, you were a contributor to that, were you not?
Yes, I was. I was lucky to have Chris ask me to be a part of it.
And how did that come about?
Well, Chris was kind of bouncing some thoughts off of me and a few other people about this project. And he was like, you know, I came up with this idea. I don't know if it's going to be of interest to anybody. What do you think? And I thought it was a great idea. And apparently so did everybody else he was consulting with. And so I asked him, I'm sorry?
I said, little did you know he was recruiting you.
Yeah, I know, but that's okay because I got to choose my story. So,
oh, you did?
I did.
And what did you?
A lot of people didn't, but that's okay. Everybody did a fantastic job, even if it wasn't the story they wanted it originally.
Sure, sure. So, what did you choose?
The Lion's Mane,
which
is my BSI investiture.
Makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Now, do you know why you were given that investiture in the BSI?
Well, I asked Mike Whalen because he said something when he was introducing it at the BSI dinner in 2014, but I wasn't paying attention because I didn't expect to be called up on the stage. So I don't remember what all he said, and I asked him later, and he doesn't remember what he said. So, no, I have no clue.
Was it something you were interested in before that point?
Well, I had been using an email address, Cyanea Capilata. So maybe then that's, of course, the name of the lion's mane jellyfish.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
I didn't say any more about that.
Oh, my God, it's a jellyfish.
Man.
Behold, the lion's mane.
I thought it was a snake.
I thought the peanut butter was a dead giveaway.
Now, why would you have chosen that as an email address of all the email addresses you could have chosen?
I don't know. It was kind of quirky, and nobody would ever remember it. So,
and it's certainly taken.
That's right. I don't like to get a lot of emails, so I picked that one.
Well, see, Bert, you need to have a really goofy email address.
Oh, there you go.
I'll give you Cyanea Capilata if you want. Nobody knows how to spell it.
Yeah.
So that's very cool. So you chose the lion's mane as your story. What justification did you put together? How did you make the case among these 59 other stories that the lion's mane is the best Sherlock Holmes story?
Well, first of all, it's told by Sherlock Holmes. So, you know, to me, that was a winner right from the beginning. Also, we get to see a lot of the inner workings of Holmes's mind during the whole process of him trying to figure out exactly what happened when people and dogs are dying. And the one thing that struck me as I was rereading the story for the essay was that Holmes remembered a resource, a book, that something in the book sparked his memory, or his memory was sparked that he wanted to use that book. Sorry. And it reminded me of all of us who like to write about Sherlock Holmes, who like to do Sherlockian scholarship, where we're just kind of floating around trying to get an angle, get a hook, something that we want to say about a particular aspect of the canon or whatever. And suddenly a little light goes off and we remember something that we've read or heard, and we run and grab that and the research begins. And so when that happened in the story, I was like, oh, I can so relate to this. Mm. And because of that, I could relate to Holmes. And so that was kind of my hook.
So you must have seen Mr. Holmes with Ian McKellen,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So same kind of time frame, relatively. You know, we've got mm-hmm. in retirement down on the Sussex shore there. And that too gave us much more insight into the man and to his heart as well as his head.
Right.
I would imagine you saw the parallels there as a lion's mane fanatic. And what was your response to that portrayal?
I enjoyed it. It was just, you know, it was sad. I kind of didn't want to see Holmes become Mr. Holmes.
Yeah.
In that film, I kind of didn't. I wanted to keep Holmes younger and more vibrant, and you know, the Holmes that I've known from the pages of Conan Doyle.
Sure, sure. Do you have a favorite Sherlock Holmes portrayer?
Jeremy Brett.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, Jeremy Brett.
Yeah,
I like all the other ones.
Yeah, but you're not
but
a. You're
I.
Not...
I
Yeah, but you're not a big fan of Nigel Bruce's Watson, though. I've heard that.
Oh, I'm not at all. I have nothing against Mr. Bruce himself, but he did a great disservice to Watson, and I'll try to forgive him someday.
Oh.
I'm very fond of Watson.
Nigel Bruce has many fine qualities, but being Dr. Watson is not one of them.
Indeed. Indeed. So... What did we miss here? I mean, what a rich tapestry of Sherlockian interests and involvements that you have. What did we miss in all of this conversation?
Well, I did write a piece for one of the BSI manuscript series books, The Wrong Passage.
Oh, yes.
About that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was asked to write about the poison that Anna Corum used.
Ooh.
And,
do you have knowledge of poisons in general, or how did that?
Very amateur knowledge, but I have friends who know things. So I have a friend who is a pharmacist out in Texas, and also a friend. Well, I don't know that she would call me a friend, but we're acquaintances anyway. Deborah Blum, who has written a number of fabulous nonfiction books about poison and arsenic and all of that. And so I consulted with both of them. I took Anna Corum's symptoms and tried to determine what poison would have created those symptoms. And I started to approach it from the viewpoint that maybe Anna Corum did not die.
Ooh.
Because nowhere does it say in the story that she died. And if she didn't die, it had to be a particular kind of poison. And if she didn't die, what happened to her after? So that's what I based my essay on, and consulted with Lucy Zare and Deborah Blum about the poison that I believed was the one that Anna would have had to use if she did not actually die.
Interesting.
So that was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, now that, if I remember right, that was a chapter that had two sort of virtual inquests going on in it.
Yes, exactly. I shared the chapter with Paul. I can't remember him. He's a very, very nice man. I can't remember his last name. Mm. His first name is Paul. He's a physician or retired. But yeah, he wrote about Willoughby Smith's.
Yes,
death, and
then
I
right.
wrote about Anna Corum.
Hmm. You have been busy, Ms. Morris.
Well, hopefully it's keeping me out of trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
we'll leave it there.
Yeah, we'll leave that.
What it has done is it's left you squarely in the service of others. You know, creating and crafting and connecting. Any of these finer points to make the world of Sherlock Holmes stand out and to have an impact on minds young and old alike. Sherlockians that have just joined us and Sherlockians that have been around for quite a while. It sounds like it's a vibrant and wonderful job that you've done in all of these things.
Thank you. I just have so much fun with it all. I want to make sure everybody else is having as much fun.
There you go. That's a wonderful attitude to have. I like that.
Mm. Well, thank you.
Share my fun, people.
Totally.
Very cool. By the way, it's Paul Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. I apologize to Paul Martin for not having remembered his last name.
From Minnesota.
Love you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, maybe we'll get him on the show sometime to give his side of the story.
Yeah, I'll teach him.
And I'd be like, I wrote a chapter with, I can't remember this woman's name. Even though it's
I would deserve that. I would deserve that.
Well, Jacqueline Morris, it's been an absolute treat. Where can people go to find out more about Scintillation of Scions, Watson's Tin Box, or anything you want them to know about?
Hmm.
Well, we have a presence on Facebook. Both Watson's Tin Box and Scintillation. On Facebook, it's A Scintillation of Scions, and it's Watson's Tin Box of Ellicott City, Maryland. But I think if you just put in Watson's Tin Box on Facebook, it might take you there. There are also websites involved. That is scintillation.org, although I need to get out there and update that website. I haven't put on anything for the upcoming year, but scintillation.org and then watsonstinbox.com.
Okay.
We'll
have links to both of those, the websites and the Facebook pages of each of those entities. And
Thank
of course to, everything we've talked about that, people want to know more about 60 and Undershaw and all the rest, we'll have links to all of those on the show notes. But Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been great fun. Hmm.
Well, that was lovely.
Well, that was lovely. Sometimes we finish, you know, these discussions with people, and I'm always sort of at the same spot. I never voice it, but I say to myself, "Who knew?"
I know.
Yeah.
I kept, you know, as we're going through, you know, item after item with Jacqueline, and each was a pleasure. It felt like peeling an onion, you know, layer after layer after layer. What a wonderful diversity of interests that we get in every single Sherlockian we come across.
Yeah.
You put all those people in a room together and it's a diversity of diversities.
Or a scintillation of,
science.
Of scions. Yeah.
Indeed.
Distillation.
There you go.
Distillation of Diogenes.
But I love the notion of how Jacqueline described the show, described the gathering as a family reunion of sorts.
That theme just keeps coming back. You know, it's voiced very well with Al and Julie Rosenblatt about it started with Sherlock Holmes. Now it's all about friendship, but
yeah,
it's, you know, I had no idea. I mean, when I had first become enamored of Sherlock Holmes and the canon and discovered there were irregulars, it was a joy to talk to people about this common interest, but I never realized the kind of community that would grow around me as a result and how interesting. It does seem to me that everybody is vastly more interesting than I am, though. Maybe everybody feels that way.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, you spend too much time in your own skin, and it's like, really?
Yeah.
And so many different pastimes and interests that people partake in that, wow, if I only had more time, if I only could clone myself, all the other things I might be doing.
If I could only stop working and just spend the day pursuing my own interests, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Though I'd miss the work. I really like the work.
Well, you know who we don't miss?
Who? Who don't we miss?
Our friends over at the Baker Street Journal.
Oh, goodness. Are they still in business?
Well, let's hope so.
Yes.
While it's quite likely that you've heard the Baker Street Journal called the leading publication of Sherlockian scholarship since 1946, and we hope you've heard it because we say it every time here on the episodes, we have a question for you. What does that really mean? It could simply mean that it was the first of its kind. Before 1946, no one was producing a regular or even irregular collection of scholarship on an ongoing basis. It could also mean that it's the definitive resource that many Sherlockians turn to when they're looking to delve into ideas past and present on issues small or large in the canon. Or it could mean that you've simply exhausted your Google search and arrived at BakerStreetJournal.com, where you stare in amazement at the myriad of choices that lie before you. Well, whatever it means to you, it's clearer than ever before. The Baker Street Journal stands out amid a sea of electronic information today about Sherlock Holmes. It stands out as a beacon, if you will, of some of the most intelligent and thoughtful papers you're likely to read about the Sherlock Holmes stories, or films, or television programs, or more, for that matter. So, the real question is, why don't you subscribe yet? For less than $1 a week, you can have access to all of this and more. Won't you join us by going to BakerStreetJournal.com and subscribing today?
Well, I guess that means there's a few minor bits of business left here. One, if you'd like to get in touch with us, there are a number of ways to do that. We outline that on iHearOfSherlock.com, which is certainly one of the ways to do it. But there you can find all of our contact information, our email, which is comment@iHearOfSherlock.com, links to our Facebook page and our Twitter account and our Flipboard magazine with all sorts of news items that we find related to Sherlock Holmes, all on iHearOfSherlock.com. Check us out there and run off to all the other points on the web that you think are relevant to you from there. But, yeah.
And please, yeah. You know, we keep asking you people, call us, contact us, tell us something. Come on, folks, it wouldn't kill you. You know, just 774-221-READ. Let us know what's going on. We're so curious.
Yes, yes, we are. And you know what else we're curious about? What you think of this show. Well, we may regret that later on. But go to iTunes, bit.ly/iHearOfSherlock. We'll get you there. bit.ly/iHearOfSherlock, all lowercase. That will bring you directly to our iTunes page. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. Even better, tell the world what you think about this little nutty gathering we do every 2 weeks here. That's the thing.
Tell the world, spread the joy.
Yes.
Friends, if you're like me, you're tired of losing all those Sherlockian quizzes because you can't remember the square root of Morse Hudson's address or the color of Vincent Spaulding's collar buttons. That's why you need new Sherlock Holmes brand genetic memory. All the words of the canon have now been encoded in new genes, easily delivered into your cells by bacteria specially engineered by BSI scientists. It's the only genetic memory aid that delivers the three C's. Consistent, contest, conquest. Conquest. Don't be fooled by other treatments that require expensive electrodes implanted in your hippocampus. Get instant recall of every fact by choosing Sherlock Holmes brand genetic memory today. Sherlock Holmes brand genetic memory is not to be used with other implants such as breast or dental. Tell your doctor if you frequently drink water or eat food. Sherlock Holmes brand genetic memory may increase your risk of sitting quietly at home smiling to yourself in the dark. Not available in California.
Now, before we close out, we do have some late breaking news that happened just yesterday as we're recording this.
Oh.
The official premiere date for Sherlock Season 4 has been released. It is January 1st, 2017. Another New Year's showing, just like the one 2 years ago. So look forward to seeing Culverton Smith spring to life in the modern day version of The Dying Detective, as well as two other episodes that are involved there. So take note.
Oh, very good. Now, what do you mean when you say two other episodes?
There are three episodes in total.
In the upcoming season.
Yes.
Yeah, but we're not going to see all of those on the first.
Not on the first, no. But the first one premieres on the first, and I would imagine over the next two Sundays, which includes the BSI weekend, by the way. So hurry back and see that episode. So yeah.
Very good.
That should be great. Well, we've done it again, Magoo. Yes. And you have done it again. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to us. And as we said, please share this with other folks. This is ihose.co/ihose107 if you're looking for the short code there. Let us know what you think, but let other people know what you think as well. And until we hear from you, this is Scott Monty.
And this is Bert Wolder. Wolder, Wolder.
And we join each other in wishing you a hearty
the game's afoot.
You know, I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I am neglecting business of importance, which awaits me elsewhere.
Thank you for listening.
Please be sure to join us again for the next episode of I Hear of Sherlock Everywhere, the first podcast dedicated to Sherlock Holmes.
Goodbye, and good luck, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.
And even later breaking news.
Yes.
We just got a note from Jacqueline after she hung up with us.
Yes, yes.
He wanted us to mention the Scintillation of Science Committee, without whom SOS would not have continued to exist. So she wanted us to mention the committee, which includes the likes of Susan Bailey, Naya Dodson, Beth Austin, Debbie Clark, Jamie Mahoney, Maureen Wynn,
Carla Coop,
and Karen Wilson, all members of Watson's Tin Box. And Debbie and Beth are also members of the Adventuresses of Sherlock Holmes. As always, a wonderful team approach to Sherlocking, the way we like to hear it done.